Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh my God, you hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
Happy Lincoln Park Bar and Grill Trivia Wednesday, 520. 520, we're throwing out the Lincoln Park Bar and Grill Trivia question. You call us up, 843-652-3776. Tell Brian the answer correct, and we will hook you up with a $25 gift certificate. I'm worried that today's is too easy. We've had some difficult ones in the past. Between North Carolina and South Carolina, the last football championship, that took about seven callers to get UNC 1980. And in all fairness, I wouldn't have got it without Google either. Wikipedia, more accurately. This one, I'm afraid it's a little too easy. But we'll get into that at 520. So if you know it, you got to be quick on the draw. You might want to put 843-652-3776 in your contacts so you can go ahead and holler at Brian when I drop that question. Now, I'm going to get into a lot of Coastal Carolina football here right now in this opening segment. The press conference was today, as it is every Wednesday, where Coach Moglia meets with the media. And I found a lot of aspects of the presser interesting today. But first, Yogi Berra passes away. That's the main story in a lot of media outlets right now. And he's always someone that I've been a little bit fascinated with, even though he's far before my time. Like when I first started watching baseball, the Yankees in the late 90s, they were the dynasty. I mean Paul O'Neill, Scott Brosius, Tino Martinez, Jeter, Rivera, Pettit. I mean, they those guys were just winners. They were consummate professionals, and it seemed like they were winning every year. And in reality, it was four championships out of five, which in modern expansion era baseball, football, basketball, it seems insane that that would happen. Basketball, I think that you, because of how dominant one particular player can be in basketball, I think you have the best shot of having a true dynasty. But you want to talk about a dynasty. Yogi Berra won 10 World Series. 10. Imagine having 10 rings. I mean, the only people in modern sports, like Phil Jackson, has 11 as a coach and 2 as a player, so he's got 13, but that's just insane. I'm not the person that is most interested in ring counting in sports media. I think that in general that gets a little lazy, but when you have a sample size as big as 10, you're doing something right. Like you can say, okay, Yogi Berra has 10 rings. Chances are he did some good things on the baseball diamond. Chances are he contributed to some of those. Like, anytime someone says that so-and-so is automatically better than so-and-so because of rings, I'm like, okay, so if you have a fantasy draft of all available basketball players, you're taking Robert Horry over Michael Jordan because Big Shot Bob's got more jewelry. Is that really the argument you're going to make? But 10 rings, that is an awful lot. Guy was a three-time MVP in the American League. And I thought it was interesting and also fun to hear Coach Moglia talk about Yogi Berra and what those Yankees teams meant in his childhood.
I think just but Yogi, I remember certainly Yogi growing up, I loved the Yankees, I loved baseball. You know, I still playing competitive baseball when I was 39, 40, and 41 in the Men's Senior Baseball League. And even after when I was a kid and got married, I was playing semi-pro baseball. And, you know, I was always a Yankee fan. And when I was a little kid, I'd watch the Yankees, like, get up on television. And I had every one of the, like, the 1961 Yankee lineup, I still know cold. And as those guys get up, I would stand in like my living room and make believe I was swinging a bat, and I would do whatever their routine was up a plate. Here comes Mickey Mantle, here's Roger Maris, here's Yogi Berra, and I would do kind of what those guys did. And so he was a great player, and I met him, because you remember the National Italian American Foundation, so I've actually met him 4 or 5 times, and his wife Carmen.
That's what I love about Coach Moglia is sometimes he is guarded and evasive about more technical football issues. Like if you ask him if, hey, is Alex Ross not going to run the football this weekend because he's got a bum ankle? Obviously, he's not going to straight up give you the game plan. But when it comes to issues outside of the Coastal Carolina game plan, he can be really open to answering questions, and he can be pretty self-deprecating, can be pretty funny. And the idea of this guy who is such a success in the corporate world and winning 80% of his college football games and so esteemed, and just imagining him as a kid practicing Yogi Berra's batting stance. It's just kind of fun. I mean, it's what sports are all about. It's how all of us listening likely got drawn in. And shifting gears to more of Coastal Carolina's football issues right now, they're playing a Bryant team this weekend that's 2-0, so both teams combined are 5-0. And in general, people are saying that Bryant has a very good defense. But rewinding back to last weekend against Western Illinois, it is evident both in hearing Coach Moglia and the athletes themselves, the players in the team, that they were just really touched by the crowd support in the grandstand, the amount of people that showed up to Brooks Stadium. And Coach Moglia really believes that was a difference in the game.
What we were all very, very proud of as a team and appreciative of was the student body getting involved, being at the game. Their enthusiasm, their support, no one went to cheer, no one to go after it, everybody being there at the end of the game. Our guys all very much appreciate that. And I want to thank the students for having been as supportive as they were last Saturday. And certainly we're looking forward to them just continuing to do that. And for those students that are not there, appreciate kind of really what's going on. It is a fun environment. It is an exciting environment. Everything we talk about is the fact that we represent them. So when they're there, you know, that means a lot to us.
And he goes on to say that, you know, the special teams on Saturday were excellent too, and they were a big reason why. We're going to get into his clip in a second. But when I think about Coach Moglia, and one of the things I really enjoy speaking with him and watching him deal with the media, just basically any aspect of his mindset that I can see, I'm really fascinated by, because the guy is just, he's just purely successful. Like, and he does not throw an awful lot of football jargon out there. Like a lot of football coaches that you can see, it's really evident that they were successful position coaches, or hey, this guy's a stud play caller, he works well with quarterbacks. With Coach Moglia, you can tell it's just relentlessly the process of being successful and how that translates to running a college football program. And I think that we can reverse engineer some of that information and apply it to our lives. And so every time I talk to Coach Moglia, I'm like, okay, this guy is just excellent. And I think it challenges me. And so, you know, you can see the way that, you know, his mission is putting a team on the field that Myrtle Beach can be proud of. And one of the byproducts of that is having a packed stadium. If the community is proud, they show up and they support you. Well, when you end up in a game with Bryant and it's 34-27 and you really need a stop on the final possession, and Bryant is going into the student section, driving into it, and they're making a lot of noise, and it becomes hard to change plays in the line of scrimmage, and you can't audible, that's that extra 1%. That's that extra 2% advantage that they're always looking for to try and win a game. And we talked about that with regard to special teams, and Moglia brought that up again today. And I thought this was very interesting to hear him go through the successes that they had on special teams, and not only that, but single out the assistant coaches who were doing a great job coaching in special teams.
Area of the game that I thought we were just outstanding, just truly outstanding, was special teams. I think across the board, field goal was solid. We missed one, but field goal was solid. But our kickoff team, which we call Hit Squad, Carome Cox is responsible for that. They've been great, I think, all season long. Our kickoff return that Renato Diaz is responsible for. And it's not just Devin's returns, it's the blocking, it's the schemes, it's always making adjustment during the span of the game. I couldn't be prouder with what they did. Our punt team, Nick Jones is responsible for that. I thought they did an outstanding job. We averaged 45 yards net or so a punt. That's great as far as field position goes. Our punt block and return team, I thought, did an outstanding job. Again, not just Chris's returns, but the job we were able to do up front. Kurt Baldus is responsible for that. And our punt field goal block team, Ryan Goodman is responsible for that. We got a block, but we put pressure on the guys. We were still prepared for fake. We won the game because of special teams. And I'm very, very proud of that.
And that is, again, taking that extra 10 or 20%. If a lot of teams look at special teams as a way to put their freshmen and sophomores on the field and not risk injury to key players, Coastal Carolina takes their special teams very seriously. And it is interesting to hear him mention out, single out assistant coaches that are adding a lot to the program. And he goes out of his way, completely goes out of his way to mention his assistant coaches all the time. And when I talk to people about Coach Moglia, for instance, when I was at the NCAA tournament in 2014, Coastal Carolina was about to play Virginia up in Raleigh. And I bumped into Tom Sorensen, who's a columnist at the Charlotte Observer, who I had known from when I worked there. And he said, you know, I told him what I was doing and I was living in Myrtle Beach and everything. He said, hey, really interesting football coach at Coastal Carolina. What's he like? And I told him a couple of stories. And one of the things that I mentioned when people ask me about Moglia is relentlessly process oriented. And he really lets his coaches coach. Like, he puts together a good staff and lets them do what they're good at. And people are going to work harder if you give them props, like if you give them credit. And he, one thing he always really does well is mentioning guys that are working hard, working well for him. So, you know, some things, nothing new, nothing shocking about Coach Moglia and the way he operates, but just fascinates me every time I see him in action like that. Now, Coastal Carolina, I'm not sure if this is because of the FBS move. I'm not sure what you can attribute this to, but it is very exciting news. And that is, Coastal Carolina, if you are, and take this with a grain of salt, but if you are looking at 247sports.com Rival Scout, like if you're looking at recruiting rankings, in all likelihood, they got the highest rated player that they've ever received a commitment from. And that is a somewhat local player. Dylan quarterback Avery McCall. He is a 3-star player. They grade him out at 85% on 247sports.com, and they say that he has offers from South Carolina and Tennessee. Now, all offers are not the same. I'm not 100% sure he was going to be a quarterback at both places, so I'm not going to speak authoritatively about his commitment. I just found out that he committed today. I actually have not gotten a chance to see the guy play. He did torch North Myrtle Beach in week one of the season, but because of where high school games are played and that I have my high school show in Merle's Inlet on Friday nights, I usually go to St. James or to Socastee, and I haven't had a chance to see Dylan play. But this kid has won 3 state championships as a starting quarterback. Like, they were the state champions when he was a true freshman starting a quarterback. He's got a chance to be the first person ever in the history of South Carolina as a starting quarterback to win 4 state championships. So in terms of productivity, he's a big deal. He's 6'2", about 200 pounds, runs a fast 40, dynamic athlete, really dynamic athlete. And so they brought in another 3-star quarterback last year named Chance Thrasher that it's unusual for Coastal to get a 3-star player, to get someone that pops up on the recruiting services. But I have a feeling that's going to happen a lot more now. And they are well stocked. The cupboard is full at quarterback. I don't know for next year. I don't know what's going to happen immediately after Alex Ross leaves, but moving forward, they're going to have some talent to work with. And Dave Patenaude is one of the best offensive coordinators in FCS football. So I thought that was very interesting and a sign of how far the program's come. It just seems like it's almost insane how much it's grown over the past 2 years. Just like almost every week, oh, they join a new conference, record attendance, biggest recruit they've ever gotten, still, you know, number one in the FCS coaches poll again. It's exciting. So, definitely get a chance to get out to Brooks Stadium on a Saturday if you guys haven't already. Now, we're going to drop the Lincoln Park Bar and Grill trivia question at 5:20. Winner gets a $25 gift certificate. Like I said, I'm afraid it's a little too easy. I'm afraid it's a little too easy. And David Ortiz, really making me laugh. He filled out on Derek Jeter's website, the Players Tribune, a questionnaire on his favorite actor, his favorite song, what he would do if he were not a professional athlete. Pretty funny response. So if you can think of some professional athletes and what job they should do other than what they're doing now, could get into a pretty funny conversation next. This is Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
Lincoln Park Bar and Grill Wednesday, so we're going to drop that trivia question about 2 minutes. But we had a caller during the break ask about our HTC Survivor Pool. I hope you guys are all playing. It's a lot of fun. Unless you're like me and you're already done. Brian, do we have an update on the HTC Survivor pool? What's left? Is it? It's like 30 people and a bunch of cockroaches. Like the Survivor pool, there aren't many survivors. That's the point.
Did I catch you right? Aaron and Pat are also out?
Yeah, we're all done.
Wow.
Like, if you're one of the 36 people that hasn't lost a Survivor pick yet, and listen, all it is winners. It's not even against the spread. It's just pick a winner this week. You can't pick a winner more than once. And
If I had a revival, I think I could make it a little farther.
Yeah. See, on the staff, we're not allowed to have a revival, but you guys can get a revival by posting on our Facebook page. Now, there are a lot of people doing that. So, like, my phone is buzzing all day with Facebook notifications. Aaron is the one that handles that. So if you want to double check and make sure that he gets your revival request, hit him up, thedrive@cumulus.com. So that's how you email him. So just be tenacious about it. Make sure that Aaron can get you back in the game because you don't want to be in this in the Survivor pool. You don't want to be like me.
Maybe I'll quit so I can get a revival.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, there are going to be some prizes. You're going to get the hookup, right? I mean, you're going to get the hookup from us if you end up winning. But chances are you got caught in the blast radius if you have not already gotten a revival. I mean, it was ruthless. And Drew Brees, I didn't know he was going to get a noodle arm. I didn't know that was going to happen. And I didn't know Jameis Winston was going to learn how to play in his second week.
You got Peyton Manning fluttering yep. ball syndrome.
Fluttering footballs. All right, it is a Lincoln Park Bar and Grill Wednesday. So our Lincoln Park Bar and Grill trivia question is, the South Carolina Gamecocks playing Central Florida this weekend. Interesting game for a number of reasons, but the head coach of Central Florida, George O'Leary, coached at Georgia Tech, and then there was a three-year gap before he coached at Central Florida. He was the coach of Notre Dame for a couple of days, for a hot minute. Why did he resign as the head coach of Notre Dame? Why did George O'Leary resign as the head coach of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish? So hit us up, 843-652-3776, and we'll get you a $25 gift certificate to Lincoln Park Bar and Grill for the winner. Now, I mentioned during the break that we were going to get to the Players Tribune. I already hear Brian said a correct answer has been put in. So someone was quicker on the draw, and I'm going to get my producer back to press buttons here in a second. Good news for all of us involved. But the Players Tribune that Derek Jeter started to allow athletes to sort of take the voice and take reporters and the media out of it, because us media, we are so hostile to players. It allows guys to get their own message out. It's an interesting concept. But with social media these days, anybody can really get the message that they want out there. So basically, it's become an elongated Twitter post. Brian, we got a winner already?
We got a bunch of people blowing us up, but we do have a winner. Charleston Sorry. Charlie, back-to-back weeks.
Charleston Chuck, man, he's killing it right now. Like I said, you got to put us in your contacts, number one, so if you've got a hot take, you can hit us up without even thinking about the number. And number two, so you can get in on this Lincoln Park Bar and Grill Trivia Wednesday. George O'Leary resigned from Notre Dame for a couple of lies on the old resume. A couple of lies about his playing career. So it is fascinating to see someone get such a high-profile gig and get it punted on the resume. That happened in 2001. So, and he's done great things at Central Florida. They were an FCS program at one point in time, and then he got them to the point where they were in the top 10 and spanking Baylor in a BCS game. So, George O'Leary has one of the better comeback stories in college football from a coaching perspective. You want to talk about coming back from a scandal? George O'Leary has been able to do that. But also, why would you, if you're an already impressive head coach, like if you're winning a bunch of games at Georgia Tech and Notre Dame is interested in you because of your merits as a head coach, why would you have a lie on your resume? Like, some people just can't get out of their own way in terms of doing something that can only harm them. Anyways, he's been able to rebound since then. We're not,
I don't get why anyone or how they can lie on their resume. It's like, how can you say you can do something and have, like, no skill at it?
Back in 2001, I think he lied about his playing career. Back in 2001, the fact-check Google era wasn't as strong as it is now. Like, our access to information is way stronger now. Anyways, George O'Leary. Charleston Charlie. Is that his new name? Like, is that Like, you know, Raider Dave called us during the break. He's Raider Dave. Like, if you called it, we've got Jack the Singing Tiger. We've got some aliases on our station now. Is that Charleston Charlie?
I guess that's what he wants to be known by.
Charleston Chuck. All right, congrats, Charleston Charlie. And you know what? I don't have to hit him up and tell him how to get to our station now. That makes it easier for me. So anyways, this meandering segment, getting back to the Players Tribune, I'm not really sure I see the value in it because players have their own voice via social media now. That's just reality. Like, if no one is wondering, I wonder what Richard Sherman thinks about this. If only there was a website for him to share his ideas. Like, no, that dude puts his ideas out there whenever and however he wants to. But David Ortiz shared some information about himself. One of them, if he was going to be played in a movie by somebody, sound familiar? We did that topic with Coach Moglia. He thinks that Denzel would play Big Papi.
King Kong ain't got on me.
David Ortiz, you know, big dude. King Kong, also big dude. Training Day. My favorite Denzel performance. You with me on that, Brian?
Oh, I love Training Day. Great movie. Yeah.
Now, David Ortiz's favorite song?
I like big butts.
Yeah, he does. That one... I don't want to call it predictable. I don't know David Ortiz's taste in music, but it is consistent because if he were not a baseball player, he wrote in on his Players Tribune Derek Jeter questionnaire that he would be an adult actor. David Ortiz, if not playing baseball, would be an adult actor.
And I saw a great comment on the article on For the Win. I can't take credit for this, unfortunately, but they said he wouldn't even have to change his nickname if he was a porn star.
Yeah, that would he would not need to change his branding whatsoever. I think that name would shift over. The newly 500 home runs, David Ortiz. By the way, that snuck into the news cycle. Like, I don't know if it's because we're done with big home run tallies because of the steroid era. I don't know if it's because the presumed PED usage in his career that we don't care about that baseball milestone anymore. But it is very interesting that someone who is the best at his position all time, which is a lack of position, designated hitter, gets a big milestone like 500, and it just kind of snuck by in the media landscape. Maybe it's because we're not in Boston. I don't know. Maybe it was written about a lot, and I just wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, I don't know. I think everything, like we've always said, it's all football.
But it got me thinking, like, athletes in other professions. Athletes in other professions, like what they would be doing. And it is easy in some regards. Like Cam Newton, you can say, okay, fashion designer. Well, he is a fashion designer. He's got his own clothing line. Like Cam Newton would clearly be in modeling and fashion design if he weren't a football player. Luke Kuechly, that's like an FBI special agent. Like, can't you imagine Luke Kuechly maybe being in the Secret Service, like a little earpiece going behind his head, you know, some shades on, tracking around the president. Got a tweet during the break. Ashton hits us up and says, Madison Bumgarner, world's greatest lumberjack. 843-652-3776. David Ortiz says he would excel at the adult acting profession. If you see an athlete and you're like, man, they would be good at another profession. They would be good at doing this. He missed his calling. He should be doing this.
I don't know if it's a job, but Aaron Rodgers would probably be a good Twitter troll because he's always doing photo bombs and stuff on his teammates, and now he's trolling Russell Wilson.
Aaron Rodgers is really, really smart.
Yeah.
Like, I think Aaron Rodgers could do stand-up, like a really sneaky kind of dry.
I got a great one.
Like, highbrow stand-up comedy, Aaron Rodgers, because the way that he went after Russell Wilson without explicitly saying it, like, I think Aaron Rodgers... He's got a lot of control up there.
How about replacement for Alex Trebek? Because he's kind of witty with some of the ways he brings the questions on Jeopardy, and obviously he's very intelligent.
Hosting a television show, I've never done it before, but I have to imagine with producers talking in your ear, looking at the right camera, knowing what to say and how to say it, and the, you know, managing the prompter and all that stuff, there's a lot of moving pieces. Like, I could see the skill set of an NFL quarterback having to direct traffic and make decisions quickly like that. I could see how he could excel at that. Aaron Rodgers, TV game show host, is the suggested profession. Texter writes in, Ric Flair, financial analyst. That's just a low blow. That's uncalled for. Texter, that is uncalled for. Texter writes in with regard to George O'Leary and the Lincoln Park Bar and Grill trivia question. You have to exaggerate your personal college football accomplishments whenever you played for the powerhouse University of New Hampshire. Yeah, I don't get it. See, here's what I don't understand about the O'Leary thing. If you like, I'm not going to act like being a former player doesn't help you get a gig, right? Ron Rivera was on the 85 Bears. But that's not why Jerry Richardson hired him. Like, that allowed him to get in a position where he could be an NFL assistant coach. He works up from coaching linebackers to coaching defenses to coaching a team. It's not like when he's interviewing for the Carolina Panthers, like, oh, you run the 85 Bears? Here's this job, right? Jim McMahon's not getting NFL head coaching interviews right now. Like, what George O'Leary did as a coach is the reason Notre Dame was going to hire him. Now, being a player, maybe having that on his resume, things that he did not do, maybe that helped him get his initial job. But that's not helping you go from Georgia Tech to Notre Dame. Like, at that point in time, you're a known commodity. You have a won and loss record. Your style of coaching, how you interact with boosters, all of those things, all of those very important things, how you recruit, that make up a college football coach and the package that is a college football coach, that's known. It's not like, oh, man, he played football at Texas. Let's get him. Let's get him right now. I mean, there are like 100 dudes that play for Texas every year. How many of them are qualified to coach Notre Dame, you know? How many of them are qualified to coach Alabama? Like, that's having a playing background. By the time you get to being a head coach, doesn't help you. I mean, having a playing background probably gets you an assistant coaching gig, right? Like, if you're, like, let's just say at 27 years old, I decided right now, this minute, midlife, quarter-life crisis, I don't know. Quarter life crisis would put me at, 108 by the time things are all said and done.
Just go somewhere in between there. You don't want to be at midlife.
A third of my life crisis. I would be screwed because I have no playing background. I have no coaching background. I mean, there are some people that have done it. Like, Mike Leach was not a player. Mike Leach has a law degree and then just got fascinated by football and scheme and stuff. And I started, as a graduate assistant at Valdosta State and worked his way up. So, I mean, there are atypical coaching rises like that. Everyone points out Coach Moglia, but Coach Moglia did coach high schools in the Northeast, and he was the defensive coordinator for Dartmouth before he went to Wall Street. So he went to football, business, back to football again. But O'Leary had nothing to gain by putting that he was a player on his resume. He had nothing to gain. That had nothing to do with why Notre Dame hired him. He paid the price. It is interesting to think, in a parallel sort of universe, what would have happened. I mean, Notre Dame fans probably would have liked to have not had to deal with Tyrone Willingham into Chuck Weiss, who I believe they're still paying. Like, I don't know who gets done paying who first. Does Notre Dame get done paying Charlie Weiss, or the Mets get done paying Bobby Bonilla? Right? I mean, I have no idea. Or does Ric Flair get done paying financial advisors?
Oh, man. Hey.
Yeah,
hey,
I that was me. The nature boy, he's been kicked a little bit. The texter wrote in and got me going on that. I can't take full credit. So, Aaron Rodgers, game show host, Madison Bumgarner, lumberjack. If you have suggestions for current athletes and other sports, that'll
be. I got
be...
another one. How about Marshawn Lynch as a mime? Since he hates talking.
Okay, I was wondering what you were doing with that. Like, I was trying to imagine Marshawn Lynch in the goofy hat, like, trying to get out of a box, and I was like, this is the dumbest thing ever. But he does hate talking.
And I think it'd be entertaining to see him dressed up in, you know, that outfit, trying to get out of an imaginary box.
The interesting thing with Marshawn Lynch that I haven't been able to figure out is how much does he not like talking versus how much does he not like criticism? Because that's really what the media is doing. The media is looking for interesting things to talk about, and that often means criticizing players. He seems kind of outspoken on his own terms, when he doesn't have to sit down in front of a microphone in front of 100 people and get peppered with questions about why he didn't get a yard in overtime against St. Louis. At one point in time, I thought, you know what, maybe this guy has social anxiety the way that the Hornets' Michael Kidd-Gilchrist does, and maybe he should get to skip press conferences. And it should be noted that Kidd-Gilchrist mans up and does it. But with Marshawn, I just kind of think that the dude just doesn't like being criticized. I don't think it has anything to do with the anxiety. Anyways, meandering show, meandering topic, 843-652-3776. If you want to have fun with that. David Ortiz says if he's not a baseball player, he's an adult actor. So if you have second career suggestions for current or former athletes, you can hit us up and let us know. Now, an interesting topic that's come up lately involving a local player is Josh Norman and the recent success he's had over the last year from being a guy that looked like might be on his last days playing in the NFL, a guy that barely at all played in the 2013 season, to becoming a standout cover corner, locking down Julio Jones in the last couple of weeks of the 2014 season, starting out in the exact same tear right now in 2015, should the Panthers have given him a contract over the summer? That's becoming a really trendy topic. I want to get into that next, as well as Thomas Davis, some of the things that he's had to say about Josh Norman lately as well. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3 of the Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. If you miss any aspect of Sound Off, hit us up, TeamMyrtleBeach.com, podcast drop-down Sound Off. Brian puts the best segments of our show, which sometimes it's all four. Sometimes it's one. Sometimes it's one. Sometimes I sit around afterwards, I'm like, man, I was not good today, Brian. None of it. Put none of it up there. I'm not really doing a good job directing people to the website right now. TeamMyrtleBeach.com, podcast Sound Off. Usually most of our good segments, all of our interviews up there.
No one bats a thousand, big guy. Don't worry about it.
Do we still have the hilariously awkward Carl Benson interview up there? Is it still up there?
It's normally up for 3 months.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that'll definitely be up there. Did not like questioning about power conference teams beating up on the Sun Belt. Did not like that one bit. 843-652-3776 is the number. So Josh Norman has, it's been remarkable how he has gone from the guy who allowed E.J. Manuel to make the Panthers 0-2 on the last drive of a game in Buffalo because he read the coverage wrong and Stevie Johnson was wide open in the end zone for a touchdown. Like, literally, guy in his second year in the NFL does not know what play he should do and costs a team a game, does not get to play again that season really at all in meaningful snaps for a team that goes 12-4 and makes the playoffs, finally gets out of the doghouse in the back half of last season and plays at an elite level. Like, how often do you hear that story? How often do you hear a guy gets benched for essentially not having a high enough football IQ and then comes back in a position that demands a high football IQ and turns around and starts playing at a very elite level? Now, I know it's early in the season, but he has played Allen Robinson and DeAndre Hopkins better than just about anybody in the league can, and he is the highest rated defensive back right now on Pro Football Focus, which is an analytics website. So, again, I'm not going to say he's the best corner in the NFL right now, but he's in the conversation. Like, if the analytics say you're the best, you're at least like top 10 or top 15. And if that's the way that the NFL market perceives him, then I have a feeling he's going to be wearing a different uniform next year. Because Dave Gettleman's philosophy, the Panthers general manager, is spend money on your defensive line. It's going to make the secondary look good. If you can pressure the quarterback, it doesn't matter who you've got back there in coverage. So he would prefer to invest his money. Again, you're in a cap sport. You can't invest your money everywhere. You got to be good at a couple of things. And he, like his background with the New York Giants, those great front fours that ended up getting to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, that's what he wants to build in Carolina. And I just have a feeling that not only philosophically, but they maybe missed their window to get him in a bargain. And I don't blame the Carolina Panthers either. Josh Norman, and I said this about Greg Hardy a year and a half ago, different reasons, mind you, but he's one of those guys that you would be terrified to not have him, but you would also be terrified to give him like a 5-year deal with a ton of money. And I'm not suggesting he and Greg Hardy have the same problems at all. I'm not suggesting that at all. They're just in that category where there is some lack of consistency and there is a risk in giving him big time money. But there are also 32 teams in the NFL. And I happen to think that one of them is going to give him big-time money this offseason.
Well, I'm looking at the contracts right here for the top cornerbacks, and Byron Maxwell is way down at 5 or 6. I can't count correctly right here. And he's
former Clemson grad.
He's getting 10.5, and look how poorly he's playing this year. So if Josh Norman has that big of a year, I mean, Revis is at top with 14.
Yeah,
so.
I think he's going to get $10 million annually. Like, I think, and the Panthers, they've signed Keekly. They've got Cam on the books. The cap is going up, so maybe they bank on the fact that the cap's going to continue to grow, or maybe Dave Gettleman continues to shop for the secondary at Walmart. I don't know. Like, I just have the gut feeling that he's going to end up wearing a different uniform because of how well he's playing. And the receivers that he has to close the season, he's got Julio on there twice. He's got Odell Beckham. Like, he's got some big dudes to try to match up against. And so his last impression on general managers before going into the offseason is going to be matching up against some really nasty dudes.
I think that'll be the deciding factor, honestly, how well he matches up against them. Because, I mean, you guys are in a tough division against big receivers. You need a cornerback that can handle them.
Mike Evans, yeah. He called out Mike Evans by name the other day. But, and Thomas Davis, really complimentary on Josh Norman lately.
Man, the dude is amazing, man. And we saw it when he first came in. And we knew what kind of ability he had, but Josh has gained the confidence that he needs to play that position, man. And he goes out, you know, he studies week in and week out, and it's showing up on Sundays. He's going out, he's making plays, and, you know, he's being a real force for us.
Thomas Davis also says he's hoping the Panthers are going to have the top-ranked defense in the NFL.
We're trying to be the number one defense at the end of the season, and I definitely feel that we can get it done. It's just all about us going out and continuing to play the style of defense that, you know, we've come accustomed to playing.
Nothing shocking there. Someone wants to be number one at something. But it is interesting because hearing that did provoke the reaction, huh, I wonder what the Panthers' defense is ranked. I know only two games in the season, but they are number five in total D and number two in scoring defense, only behind the New York Jets. How about that? The Jets only allowing 8.5 points a game right now, Panthers 13. So it helps when you play the Jaguars. It helps a little bit when you play the Jaguars and the Texans. But they haven't had Starla Tulele. They haven't had their best interior defensive lineman in the first two games, and Kuechly missed one of them. So I think that is going to be a nasty Panthers defense. I think that's the reason why they hold on and get into the playoffs.
And they haven't really been able to sustain a solid offense or drive, so well, their defense is on the field a lot more.
They're going to have to. Yeah. Well, the Panthers' offense isn't... It is a drive-sustaining kind of offense. I mean, they're not... What they're really lacking is the getting into Kelvin Benjamin 30 yards down the field. They lack the explosive threat, but they're, you know, Cam Newton extending drives with six-yard scrambles and... hopefully sliding, although he's not very good at that. That's the kind of offense that they are, and that's the way Mike Shula draws it up. I mean, have large people run the football. That's kind of his philosophy. Mike Tolbert, Cam Newton, Jonathan Stewart, and keep the defense off the field. That's what Ron Rivera likes. That's the philosophy he wants because he's a defensive coach. He wants his defense to be out there making plays.
Well, if he keeps up the pace, four passes defensed, one interception, a touchdown, and a forced fumble through two games, that's real good numbers.
Yeah, by the way, Josh Norman's going to have a chance to get some picks this weekend. Drew Brees had a noodle arm last weekend against Tampa. I mean, he had a Peyton Manning fluttering footballs. You like how I edited myself this time? Fluttering footballs arm. And he tried to plant his back leg and unleash some throws downfield that were like 10 yards short. I mean, they look like flat-out ducks. So, and he said he's going to do everything possible to play this weekend. The Drew Brees news has been all over the place. Like, structural damage to non-structural damage. Now he's got a bruised rotator cuff. Unlikely to play this week. Now he's saying he's going to do everything possible. I don't know if they're trying to espionage the Panthers right now. But again, it's like, I don't even really care as a Panthers fan. Because he's not going to be good. I mean, if you saw what he did last weekend, unless he's taken some serious HGH or some serious steroids...
Deer like, spray.
Yeah, unless he's got holographic reflectors or deer antler spray.
I saw a report today, though, that he said his arm's fine. It's just the strength. So
yeah,
he's already throwing a bat before that.
It's called stretching the field. The Panthers are going to tee off on that dude.
And they're back. Luke McGowan, what's he going to do if he's called
that's
up to
start? That's what I'm talking about with quarterback espionage. Like, I don't get the value of not naming your starter. Because if you're trying to be cute with your quarterback, you are not good. Like, you're just not good. Bill Belichick's not going to the press conference. He's like, yeah, we haven't named our starter yet. I don't know if it's going to be Jimmy Garoppolo, Tom Brady. And we're going to make a decision at game time. Like, nobody's taking that seriously. If you're making a decision on your starting quarterback position is not good. And Drew Brees, certainly way better than those other dudes, but bruised rotator cuff, Drew Brees was not very good last weekend.
Their offense is just looking so inefficient. It's like, what happened to the Saints? They used to be such a powerhouse. People used to be scared of that offense. Now it's like, yes, we're playing the Saints.
Well, when you get rid of Jimmy Graham, I mean, who are their weapons in the passing game? Like, who's the dude on the Saints team that I'm supposed to be afraid of getting the football? You're in a dome with Drew Brees. Like, you should like know who you are and know what you do. Like, I don't know where the Saints are spending their money. Like, I don't know what they have that's good. Like, what do the Saints have besides Drew Brees and his career that I'm interested in having, like, as a Panthers fan. Like, ooh, I want that. Sean Payton, maybe? Rob Ryan's ridiculous haircut?
Maybe Braden Cooks, however you say his name.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an awful lot. Speaking of our athletes and second careers, Patrick Budd tweets out 1003 the team, Brett Favre, Walmart greeter.
Oh, what?
I don't understand what that is. Why would he be a Walmart greeter?
I don't know. I would go to Walmart all the time if I knew Brett Favre was going to be standing there.
Yeah, seriously. If I can shake the gunslinger's hand and...
break your hand?
Yeah, seriously. Can we confirm, does Brett Favre have the, like, crazy, I've been hiding down in a cave look going on? Like, you know when he had the rusty beard thing?
Santa Claus beard?
Yeah, the Santa Claus beard. It looked like Brett Favre aged 15 years, and I'm convinced it was his final year with the Vikings.
I know he shaved when they did the ESPYs because they were all making fun of him for doing the creepy, like, hand shake thing with Caitlyn Jenner or whatever, Bruce Jenner.
Okay.
When she went up to stage to get her Courage Award.
You know, I'm going to admit something, Brian. I'm going to admit something. I don't watch award shows.
I'm just not into it.
I mean, I get they put the ESPYs on when there's not a sports game. They put it on during the dead period. There's a reason to it, but I don't watch the Academy Awards. I don't watch the Emmys. Not into award shows.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll look at them, and if I see someone's won a lot of Academy Awards, like if I see a movie's picked up 10 Academy Awards, I will watch that movie. But I'm not going to watch the 8 hours of people in suits talking about who helped them. Like, that, it's just not interesting to me.
Yeah.
Anyways, 843-652-3776 is the number if you want to get in on the amusing topic of athletes and second careers. We've got room for you. And also, some other news from the Coastal Carolina press conference earlier today, with regard to Alex Ross and perhaps his availability on Saturday. Also, an interesting thought on Quinn Backus, who's going to be honored this weekend. That's coming up on Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3 of the team. I'm Lewis Woodard. Having fun on today's show with the idea of athletes and second careers after sports. We're getting into this because David Ortiz on Derek Jeter's website, the Players Tribune, he went through some of his, he took a survey. It was very nice of him to answer Derek Jeter's survey, but one of them was, you know, who would play him in a movie? And he said Denzel.
King Kong ain't got on me.
You know, I don't know that that's a good one for Big Poppy. First of all, Denzel's a little skinnier than him. He's a little thinner than Big Poppy, and he's really angry. Like, I see Big Poppy as a really jovial kind of guy, except for when you're asking him if he did PEDs. If you ask him why he went from hitting 20 home runs a year in Minnesota to hitting 35 to 50 a year in Boston, if you ask him why he does that, he's not jovial. Anyways, his second career apparently is as an adult actor. So we've gotten some suggestions for other athletes and their second careers. And we do have JC on the line who has a suggestion for us.
Hey, Lewis. How y'all doing?
Doing pretty good. What's good, man?
Listen, and, you know, the new Star Wars movie is set to come out.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the producers, instead of having to find an actor to play Jabba the Hutt, they just got Mark Mancino for coach. You know, that's my pick, is Mark Mancino and Jabba the Hutt in the Star Wars remake.
Yeah, I don't know. Ralph Regan doesn't have a job right now. Maybe he can interview with Jabba.
I have too, with Charlie Weiss.
Charlie Weiss. You know?
But Mancino's got the character for Jabba the Hutt down, because he's as gruff as he gets, and he weighs about 600 pounds.
Yeah.
So, that's my pick, and y'all have a good one.
Yeah, appreciate it, JC. Mangino, one of the more underrated coaches of the last 10 to 15 years. If Mangino's actually Jabba the Hutt, I don't think that Han Solo gets unfrozen. Like, I think Han Solo is frozen forever if Mark Mangino is the Jabba the Hutt.
I've never seen him before. I just Googled, and that is great.
He played in an Orange Bowl with Kansas. Imagine Kansas in a BCS Bowl. You can't. And it wasn't all that long ago. It was like in the mid-2000s. It was not very long ago. And now Kansas, they can't win games in the Big 12, like any. Like, if they're 1-9, that's a successful season now. There is a really funny picture of Mark Mangino, the very round Mark Mangino, standing next to the very round Orange Bowl mascot. Like, seriously, Google Mark Mangino Orange Bowl, and it is a classic picture. Texter writes in regard to athletes and second careers. This one's a little messed up. Texter writes in, Dustin Johnson, dealer. I don't think he means car dealer. No?
He could go sell some Nissans.
I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe he could.
He's doing pretty well. He's put up a new picture of his house.
Yeah,
his own
he does have a sick house. I think that one was actually meaner than Ric Flair, financial analyst. That one's messed up. No.
Some things you bring on yourself.
Yeah. appreciate the call from JC as always. Getting into one other thing from the Coastal Carolina press conference that I thought was worth mentioning, or two other things right quick. Alex Ross was hampered by an ankle problem on the first play, actually, against Western Illinois. And my buddy Ryan Young of the Sun News asked Moglia about play calling, basically, with Alex's running and whether the ankle would impact what they are doing against Bryant.
Remember, what he can do, he knows the offense inside out. He knows the offense as well as the coaches know it. And so his ability then to manage the game after a call comes in, dependent upon what they give us, is pretty significant. So he can just get us out of trouble by calling the right play, number one. He doesn't have to run the ball at all. But a big piece of the offense is, if you're going to give us the quarterback run, we're going to take it. We're going to take advantage of that. Clearly, if he is running the ball or if he is sprinting out or doing any of those things, you always run the risk that he can get another ankle sprain. But a sprain is going to happen once in a while. If he's good and ready to go, I have no doubt he's going to go. And if for some reason he can't go, we'll pull him out. Or if we thought that he really wasn't able to be as effective as what he would like him to be, we'll pull him. But I think it's a matter of, if he's in there, he understands what he needs to do. He understands that as well as Dave. So between the two of them, they're going to make the right decision most of the time. And if at some point he's not ready to go, then Mike Church will be ready to go. And he's done a great job for us whenever he's been in there in the past.
Wasn't expecting him to give away the game plan and say, yeah, Alex, he's going to run less. We're not going to have structured runs, and he's going to throw the ball away more instead of trying to get first downs. I have no idea. I have no idea how quickly that ankle is going to react to treatment. But what I did think was interesting and really is the value of Alex Ross as a quarterback. It's not what he is capable of doing on his best day. It's the fact that he busts his ankle in the first play of the game, deals with the fact that he can't throw the ball downfield as far as he can when he's healthy, deals with the fact that running is no longer on the table as one of the excellent elements that he can bring to the table as a football player, and still figures out how to get a gritty win for Coastal Carolina. And I also thought it was very interesting that Moglia said that Alex Ross knows the playbook as good or better, or knows the offense as good or better than the assistant coaches. So that's a heck of a statement about a football player. And another reason to watch Coastal this year, because it's his fifth year. There is not going to be another year of Alex Ross football, and it's really a pleasure to watch him run that football team on the field. And they're gonna need some A game from him, because a lot of both the coaches and the players this week were just raving about how good Bryant's defensive front is. So he's gonna have some pressure on him this weekend. Also coming up this weekend with Coastal and the Bryant game on Saturday, 3-time conference defensive player of the year, Quinn Backus. I did not exaggerate. 3-time Big South defensive player of the year. He's getting honored. And that's gonna be cool. I mean, Herschel Walker's getting a statue at Georgia. Like, if there were a football player that would get a statue at Coastal, it would be Quinn Backus. He might not end up in the NFL like a lot of former Coastal players do, but in terms of excellence at the FCS level and meaning the most to Coastal Carolina wins, I mean, he might be the most important player they've ever had. Just happens to be undersized and not really have a professional position because of that. He's a small guy. He's a little too small to play linebacker in the pros. I'm pulling for him, though. I hope he can figure out a way to land on a roster, but he is getting honored on Saturday. That's pretty cool. All right, we'll see you guys tomorrow at 5 p.m.